Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for being part of my day. It's my pleasure to be able to hang out with you. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. You're going to be glad you hung out with us a little longer because we got our good buddy Ted Fishman back on the show, ladies and gentlemen. Ted C. Fishman, the author of China Inc. and Our Eyes into the Hidden Kingdom, the Forbidden Kingdom of China, the crazy place over there in the Pacific Rim that's so much a part of our lives these days. And Ted's the guy we go to find out what's going on over there and to see what you and I need to know about that. Ted Fishman, welcome back to the show.
So glad to be with you, Jim. Thank you.
It's good to have you back. And China, you know, Ted, I started reporting 2 years ago that China's behavior was going to be, and the neighbor's behavior was going to be impacted by the Olympics. The 08 Olympics, I said, were going to be China's crowning glory, and they were going to pull out all stops to work and play well with others to make the Olympics turn out well. In fact, I predicted that we would that North Korea would become, you know, a docile little house cat, at least running up to the Olympics and during the Olympics, because China was going to say, look, we don't want any trouble out of you. We want to try to make this, you know, go well. So don't, you know, you need to behave yourself. Now, I don't know if they threatened him or bribed him, you know, what's his name, Kim Jong-il. But anyway, but even with all the attempts that China's making to make this turn out well, they're still having trouble, aren't they?
Oh, they're having trouble, all right. In fact, you know, they've had this series of major events. First, the protests in Tibet,
yeah,
which were a huge
and probably staged to disrupt the Olympics, right?
May have been staged to disrupt the Olympics.
No, this is not me saying that those people don't have a complaint, a legitimate complaint. That's not what I'm saying. But you gotta be curious about the timing. And if I were on their shoes, I'd do the same thing.
Well, the other thing to consider is that as the Olympics got closer, the Chinese got stricter and stricter in Tibet. And so the protests may also have been a counter-reaction to to the Chinese government's initial nervousness, too.
Right.
And then, so the world was very much turned against China and its actions in Tibet. And then the earthquake in Sichuan province came. And
and the floods now.
Yeah, and the floods, and so a terrible human tragedy.
70,000 deaths now?
It's 70. Who knows what the real number is? You know, Chinese government statistics are always bad.
Mm-hmm.
I would tend to think that the numbers are low.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple things have happened. One is the Olympics, as you said, was this big opportunity to show the rest of the world the wonders of modern China, but now the Olympics is so very important for the Chinese government to show its own people what it can do. And, you know, there is this strain of nationalism that's been injected into the Olympics overtly that was not there before, and that is not for the international audience. That is for the Chinese people. And
so as we consume the Olympics this year, folks, as we watch it, you think we'll be able to see that, Ted? Will we be able to differentiate between what's intended for the rest of the world and what's intended for China?
Yeah, I think we will. I think it's going to be, we're all going to have mixed emotions when we watch it. We're going to be very, very impressed by what they've done with Beijing. You know, they spent between $50 and $100 billion building it up. And we're all going to be comparing it against these crumbs that China is asking the rest of the world for to help put people in tents in Sichuan province.
Yeah.
And but China will look to the rest of the world like a force to be reckoned with as it is. We'll see all kinds of examples of their very advanced end of the economy. But we're, I don't think we'll have unalloyed pleasure in seeing all of these wonders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like, I mean, of all the things that the Chinese leadership did not need this year, it was an earthquake, on a magnitude that it was. I mean, that's like the perfect storm for them, isn't it?
It is, but they've made lemonade out of the lemon politically. They've used it as an opportunity to reach out to the rest of the world and say, help us.
Yeah, which is not something China has done before, is it?
No, it isn't.
Yeah, this is a novel thing for them to do, and very interesting. Stand by, quick break. We're going to be right back with our good friend Ted Fishman right after these messages. It's 20 till, a lot more to come. Good stuff on China from our good friend Ted. Stay with us. We're back.
You better make it soon before you break my heart.
17 till. Little Fleetwood Mac bringing us back. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. I hope you'll check them out and use them to your advantage. There are no barriers to entry at either one of our sites, smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Ted Fishman is our guest. He is the author of China Inc. He's our eyes and ears into that incredible country, China. It's a crazy place, isn't it, Ted? It's an awesome country.
It's an awesome place. I mean, if you just think in the business sphere, for example, I was looking at the numbers before talking with you today. There are 250,000 foreign companies doing business in China today, and there's 85 million Chinese businesses. You know, this is all a place that 25 years ago had none.
Right.
And I was also looking at a study from McKinsey that was looking at multinationals and how much of their global supply chains rely on China. And the study said, in their estimate, most of their global customers are using China about half as much as they ought to, which is just a number that makes me shudder. You know, if we're doing $300 billion worth of business with China today, and here we have one of the world's premier consultancies saying, well, we really ought to be doing $600 billion with them.
And probably will, just by the virtue of the growth of the country, of the country's economy. Ted, could democracy work in China? Some form of democracy?
You know, scale is the issue with China on everything, and democracy in Asia has worked at large scales and small scales. The most vibrant democracies are in really, really big places like Indonesia and India.
Yeah.
And the Chinese like to talk about Chinese values and Asian values, which have authority at the top, a kind of father image of your leader.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, you have these big examples of Asia where the real Asian value is popular sovereignty, where the people get to decide. And if democracy unfolds in China, I think it will unfold in a way that will allow the central government to look like it's holding authority, but they'll try and keep the provinces as the place where they have their democratic experiments.
Won't the provinces have to become like states?
Yeah, they have to become
more. Won't it have to be sort of
a
United States of China or something like that?
Yeah, yeah, and there's a push-me-pull-you style of governing there. You know, every time a new government comes in, they want to make it stronger at the top, and then as they're in longer, they tend to allow more power to the provinces.
One of the things that we've talked about on the show before, and I think you've talked with us a little bit about this, Ted, is the difference in the concept of ethics in over there in that eastern part of the world, and the West, and what we consider Western ethics, there is a difference, and when the people in China, for example, apply their code of ethics and it doesn't suit ours, you know, we might think that they're being dishonest. They just think that they're being themselves, and they don't see anything wrong with that. But here's my question. How do they treat each other? How would, if a province became a state and they tried to build a market in a state like Michigan right now is,
yeah,
you know, really focusing on getting businesses back to Michigan, that kind of thing. If a province started trying to do that, are they ethical to each other? I mean, are they actually able to deal with each other in a way that would build a vibrant economy where people could trust one another?
Well, I've seen something very, very interesting lately, which is China used to be the place where businesses went to find the least amount of regulation, where in some ways they kind of thrived on the lack of ethical environment in a way, and were confident of their own controls. And that's still something that happens. You still see businesses pushing out to kind of the outer reaches of legality, but some of the provinces now are offering a more ethical, more rule-driven environment for businesses and trying to attract them that way. And I think as that happens, you'll get the better quality companies going to where they can rely on the rule of law, and then you'll get a culture change. Yeah,
contracts and my property will be protected. That kind of thing. So,
and if they don't follow through on that, then they won't have that advantage. So you might get a big culture change. Yeah,
that's got a long way to go, though, Ted.
It's got a long way to go.
There's a lot of stuff that's got to go under the bridge before it seems to me that could be very well developed. Now back to your idea of 600 doing, you know, doubling the current amount of business. If that happens, it seems to me like that could be a lot of opportunity for small businesses.
Well, there's two things going on. One is the small businesses, of course, can be the facilitators of it, but also there's opportunities for small businesses to aggregate among each other. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that the big box stores do is they go into China and they have a huge buying operations there, you know, 1,000 people doing purchasing and sourcing.
Right, right.
The model for small businesses to compete with that is, number one, of course, compete on service and just provide a better experience, but also to get together, network in some way, so that you can have the same kinds of powers in finding the goods you need.
So you don't recommend necessarily that a small business make a trip to China to find a buying opportunity and import or export one way or the other on their own, but they should kind of try to aggregate either among themselves or be part of a channel of a larger company?
I think so. You know, it costs so much money to spend time in China now.
Yeah.
And there are firms now that will take a lot of the responsibilities from you at a reasonable cost.
Good point. Ted Fishman, ladies and gentlemen. China Inc. is the book. I'm Jim Blasingame. We're going to be right back. A lot more to come after these messages. Stay with us. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for staying with me. I appreciate your business. Ted Fishman is our guest, and he's the author of China Inc., a book, one of my favorite books, and a book that I continue to refer to as I think about China, as I contemplate China's role in the 21st century. And by the way, Ted, give us your website, please, and tell us how we can find your book.
www.chinainc-book.com.
And when's the next one coming out?
You know, I'm aiming for, it's a big topic on world demographics. If I have it out within a year, I'll feel I've done my job.
Well, and we expect to launch it on this show, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Well, I look forward to it.
You tell your publisher that you've got a place to launch it right here.
Thank you.
We expect that. Ted, the 21st century, what do you see China's role? What do you see China's imprint? Are they going to eventually morph into a full-fledged, functioning, high-functioning, trustworthy player in the 21st century? Are they going to continue to be kind of a rogue in the 21st century?
I think China will rewrite the rules, and they'll function according to those rules, and the world will shape around it.
Really?
The scariest thing I see
that's a very bold statement there, Ted.
Well, you could see it already. You could see, you know, Sharon Stone was sacked from her spokesperson's job today for saying that bad karma was the cause of the earthquake, which is it's a silly thing to say, and nobody should say
that.
It.
Yeah.
But actually, it's something a Chinese person might say, because many Chinese people believe in karma.
That's irony, isn't it, that she would get sacked for saying something that was a very Chinese thing to say.
Yeah, and, you know, that shows, you know, how the country's power can reach into the way business is done everywhere
else. So now, let's talk about the United States. Are you saying that the things that the United States believes in, the fundamentals that we believe in with regard to going to market, trust and contracts and protection of property, that kind of thing, are you saying those things are in jeopardy in the future because of the way China's going to rewrite the rules?
Well, I'm saying we have to be prepared for change, because when you have a big venture in China and a member of the Communist Party is on your board of directors, his objectives are not entirely economic.
Right.
So now
we have to throw in the sovereign wealth funds.
Sovereign wealth funds.
Tell the audience what that is.
Well, these are the large pools of money that come out of state treasuries to invest abroad.
And more lately, into our own financial services companies.
Right. And the big question is, will these governments be using these just as pensions do and institutional investors to boost their returns, or will they be using them for political influence?
Mm-hmm.
And you
believe in China's case, at least, and I'm not that we couldn't debate all the others too, but in China's case, you think that could be the latter.
Well, there's virtually nothing apolitical in China, and you know, the idea that the Chinese government will, for example, invest in a media company that has an open media strategy in China would be absurd.
Mm-hmm.
They just wouldn't do it. There would be political reasons not to do it. And all kinds of other things that would be sensitive at home. You know, they can't make certain investments and then come back, report to party officials and say, this is something we're in. We have a fiduciary responsibility to do it.
You think that over the next, say, 25 years or 50, 25 to 50 years, you think that the world will conform more to China than China will conform to the world?
I think we expect China to change in our image, and they very much expect us to change in lots of ways to their image. And there's going to be a meeting of the two, and some of the places we meet will be a big surprise to us.
I feel like I'm watching the Borg come at us. You ever watch Star Trek: The Next Generation?
Yeah, yeah.
With the Borg. Remember the Borg? You know,
yeah.
Resistance is futile. You will be assimilated.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be positive change in China, too. But it's definitely a two-way street. You know, when you reach out, you get changed. You just don't. We don't have the luxury of doing all the changing.
Folks, you might not like how this sounds, but Ted Fishman is, one thing I like about you, Ted, I mean, you go over there and you bring back the agnostic report. I mean, you don't sugarcoat it. And you know, obviously, I don't know how you feel about all this, but what you tell us is good stuff. And I appreciate the diligence that you find this information and the opinions that you bring back to us very much.
Thank you, Jim. I always enjoy talking with you, and the questions are always provocative for me, too.
Thanks, Ted. We're looking forward to doing it again real soon. Ted Fishman, ladies and gentlemen, China Inc. is the book. You got to check this out. Follow Ted's writings. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.